Welcome to S&C Critical Insights. I'm Jeanette Bander, a partner in S&C's Executive Compensation Group, and I'm joined today by Annie Ostrager, the co-head of our Labor and Employment Group and a member of our Corporate Culture, Workplace Investigations, and Whistleblower Litigation and Criminal Defense and Investigations Groups. Today, we're going to talk about non-compete agreements and the evolving nature of their enforceability. We'll start off with some background before discussing recent federal and state developments and then address some recent case decisions. As listeners may know, a non-compete agreement is a general term that applies to any clause or contract that places limitations on an employee's ability to work for a competitor of their employer or from opening a competing business during or after their employment. Non-compete agreements typically only last for a prescribed period of time and may also have geographic or other limitations to them. They may exist as one section of an employment or other agreement, or as a standalone contract, and they can be signed before or after employment begins. Non-compete agreements can be a valuable tool to employers who widely report using non-compete agreements to protect trade secrets and intellectual property and prevent departing workers from taking client and customer contacts. Annie, can you give us an overview of developments at the federal level in this space of which employers should be aware?
Yes, thanks, Jeanette. Good to be here with you to discuss this topic, which regularly comes up in both of our practices. At the federal level, the main development that everyone has been watching is the Federal Trade Commission's proposed rule, which came out in January of last year, and which, if adopted, would ban most non-competes between companies and their employees and also independent contractors. The proposed rule could be read to broadly prohibit all contract provisions that create even a de facto non-compete, including, for example, a non-disclosure agreement that has the effect of limiting an employee's mobility. As drafted, the rule would also apply retroactively, not only making prospective non-competes unenforceable, but requiring employers to rescind all pre-existing non-compete agreements. Jeanette, there is one important exception to the proposed rule, though. Do you want to discuss its implications?
Yes. The exception applies to non-competes entered into in connection with the sale of a business entity or a sale of all of a business operating assets. The FTC's proposed rule would supersede all contrary state laws on this point, some of which do not provide for such an exception. This is an important limitation to the rule, as buyers in M&A transactions often use non-compete agreements to prevent sellers from turning around and using their skills, connections, and experience to re-enter the relevant market and compete with the newly consolidated firm. Annie, you mentioned there has been a big reaction to this proposed rule.
There definitely has. There were over 21,000 comments on the proposed rule that were submitted to the FTC, and the FTC is expected to hold a vote on the final rule this coming Tuesday. So this is a timely topic, and there'll be a special open meeting to discuss the rule. It's also expected that any final rule will be challenged in court, and a court could stay enforcement of the rule pending a decision on its legality. While the FTC proposed rule has been under consideration over this year plus, there has also been activity on the state level, and we've seen a general trend toward imposition of limitations on the ability to enter into non-compete agreements. In June of last year, as some listeners may be aware of, New York state legislature passed a bill that would have almost completely banned non-competes with very limited exceptions. Governor Hochul ultimately vetoed that bill at the end of last year. The governor expressed support for legislation banning non-competes for anyone making below the median wage in New York, but not for higher wage earners who would have been covered by that proposed legislation. The governor made comments rejecting what she described as the legislature's one-size-fits-all approach, which she said would not serve companies' legitimate interests. It is possible, though, that a revised bill will be introduced this year. In the meantime, New York City Council proposed three bills that would also restrict non-competes. The most expansive of those, Bill 140, would impose a total ban that would apply to paid and unpaid employees and also to independent contractors. The bill also would apply retroactively, requiring employees to rescind previously agreed to non-competes and include civil penalties of up to $500 per violation. In addition, Bills 146 and 375 propose bans for lower wage workers, which is defined in the legislation as those earning under $1,300 per week, and freelance workers. Bill 375, the freelance worker-focused bill, also proposes a private right of action allowing affected workers to sue to void a non-compete and recover statutory damages of $1,000 and also reasonable attorney's fees. Neither bill is drafted to have retroactive effect.
Shifting to California, the state has broadly prohibited non-competes since the 1940s, with limited exceptions for non-competes entered into in connection with the dissolution or disassociation from a partnership or LLC, or the sale of a business or an ownership interest in a business. California strengthened that prohibition last year, passing SB 699 and AB 1076, which added new requirements and penalties to California's existing framework. SB 699 expands California law to make non-compete agreements unlawful. Prior to the enactment of SB 699, California courts would void non-compete agreements if and when employers sought to enforce them. As a result of SB 699, employees who have been required to sign non-competes may bring a private action against their employers seeking injunctive relief and/or damages. AB 1076 codifies long-standing California case law interpreting the absolute statutory ban. This comprehensive ban applies to employers with a California presence and California-based employees, employers with a California presence and non-California-based employees, and employers without a California presence and California-based employees. Commentators have also interpreted AB 1076 to encompass agreements between entities not to compete to hire the other's employees. These agreements, known as no-poach agreements, have also been increasingly scrutinized by the U.S. Department of Justice as potential antitrust violations. Finally, AB 1076 required employers to notify current employees and former employees who were employed after January 1, 2022, in writing no later than February 14, 2024, of the invalidity of any contractual non-compete clauses. Employers who failed to comply face civil penalties of up to $2,500 per violation. In total, four states, California, Oklahoma, North Dakota, and Minnesota, have enacted a near-total ban on non-competes, with Minnesota being the first state in generations to enter the group with legislation passed last year. Minnesota's law prohibits all non-compete agreements entered into on or after July 1, 2023, with any employee or independent contractor, with only two very limited carve-outs for non-competes agreed upon either in connection with the sale of a business or in anticipation of the dissolution of a business. Although only a handful of states have generally banned non-competes, others have limited their use by limiting the class of employees who employers may require to sign non-competes, limiting the permitted scope of non-competes, such as the duration or geographic area covered, or requiring that certain procedures be followed for the non-competes to be enforceable. In Massachusetts, for example, 2018 legislation prohibits the enforcement of non-compete agreements against employees who are classified as non-exempt from overtime pay under the Fair Labor Standards Act, are undergraduate or graduate students participating in an internship or other short-term employment, are terminated without cause or are laid off, or are under the age of 18. Also, in Washington State, 2019 legislation voids any non-compete for a Washington-based employee or independent contractor if it includes a choice of venue or choice of law other than Washington State.
So we'll provide an update after the FTC meeting, but under this landscape, it's been important to pay attention to a jurisdiction's rules when drafting non-competes, and it's clear that a one-size-fits-all approach doesn't work in this type of regime. Even in states that don't have legislation addressing non-compete agreements, there's been judicial activity around the enforceability of non-competes and what law will apply. So we have been looking at that too, and I'll provide a few quick updates on relevant decisions in this space, starting with the Delaware Chancery Court, which had a couple of decisions of note recently. For instance, in Hightower Holding v. Gibson, the court declined to apply Delaware law to non-competes, concluding that another jurisdiction, in that case Alabama, had a more substantial interest, even though the employer at issue was a Delaware LLC. So that is important because it informs which law is going to apply in a case like that. There, the vice chancellor will decline to apply Delaware law, concluding that Alabama had a materially greater interest in the issues because the agreement was negotiated and executed in Alabama. The employee lived and worked in Alabama, and that the non-compete was unenforceable under Alabama's public policy concerning non-compete agreements. In Sunder Energy LLC v. Jackson, Vice Chancellor Laster applied Delaware law to a dispute between Sunder Energy, a Delaware LLC with headquarters in Utah, and Jackson, a minority member in the LLC who lives in Texas. Vice Chancellor Laster rejected Sunder's request to enter a preliminary injunction enjoining Jackson from working for a competing business. However, the court applied Delaware law because Sunder asked the court to do so, and the non-compete would have fared better under Texas law. The court explained that it was unsustainable for Delaware courts to continue to resolve non-compete disputes involving employees and businesses operating in other states and countries because the Court of Chancery will never have sufficient resources to adjudicate restrictive covenant cases for Delaware entities throughout the world. Vice Chancellor Laster certified an appeal to the Delaware Supreme Court, which may opine on this issue. The Sunder Energy case was notable for two additional reasons. First, prior to denying the preliminary injunction, Vice Chancellor Laster granted a TRO prohibiting Jackson from working for or providing services to Sunder's competitors or encouraging any employees to leave Sunder. This maintained the status quo while the court considered whether to grant the preliminary relief. Vice Chancellor Laster also ordered Sunder to post a bond. And second, Vice Chancellor Laster refused to blue pencil or reform the non-compete to be enforceable. Blue penciling, as some of our listeners likely know, is a practice where courts modify an agreement to strike the non-conforming portions or rewrite them in a way that preserves the party's original intent. Delaware courts do have discretion to blue pencil overly broad provisions, but we've seen a trend of courts refusing to blue pencil overbroad agreements to prevent employers from writing very broad provisions with the expectation that a court will just change them and narrow them if there's a challenge to their enforceability.
In light of these ongoing developments, employers should keep this top of mind when drafting agreements where non-competes may be relevant. Thank you for listening to S&C Critical Insights. For more information about our practices, please visit us on the web at www.solcrom.com.